Hey, everyone. Artificial intelligence is not just technology. It's geopolitics, economics, and global influence. The United States and China are locked in a race to lead in AI innovation. McKinsey estimates that AI could add up to 0.8% to global GDP annually, which explains why these nations are competing so fiercely for dominance. But the race is not just about speed. It's about values, governance, and how societies harness this power. On today's episode, I'm joined by Saji Madhapat, author and enterprise performance consultant, to break down what the AI race means for businesses, innovation, and the balance of global power. To support the show, click the like on this video and visit chrishood.com/show to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform. Follow us on social media or email me directly at show@chrishood.com. I'm Chris Hood, and let's get connected.
Connecting. Access granted. It's the Chris Hood Show, where experts, creators, and changemakers discuss how AI and technology are changing how we work, live, and connect. Unscripted, unfiltered, and unhyped. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Your digital evolution starts now. Here's your host, Chris Hood.
Welcome to the show. Saji, would you mind introducing yourself?
Chris, first of all, I really appreciate the honor. You know, so I'm a big admirer of this show and, you know, like the, you know, with your credentials, you know, it's truly an honor to be on this, in this platform.
Appreciate that.
If I may, I'll give a slightly, I do have a contrarian background. So I'm originally born and brought up in the southwestern side of India, a state called Kerala. That state is known as God's own country. They're about, the belief is, you know, local legends, you know, around 380 million gods in that part of the world. In summary, you know, that part of the world is known as the gods of God's own country. So that is the state where first time in the world history, a communist government was democratically elected. In the world history. In short, because of the communism, again, there is no industries over in that part of the world. So many of us, after our engineering or after our professional degree, we need to move out of the country. So I came here as a byproduct of the biggest business plunder in the world history, in my opinion, the Y2K. Y2K brought me over here. So I started in the ERP fixing, you know, like the Armageddon, fixing the Armageddon, the COBOL code, you know, like in a way replacing that with the ERP system. I started in my career in a way in the financial side of the ERP systems and then moved up the chain on the CFOs, you know, corporate financial reporting side of it, you know, CFO's office and moved up the chain. And I was also with one of the big four consulting firm. I've seen around 50 different systems around the world, and including some of the AI strategies and all those stuff. And I was heavily involved in, you know, like around 18 plus countries and various systems with some of the largest corporations in the world, including till recently when my client was second largest alternate investment management or otherwise private equity firm in this part of the world. I've seen my fair share of, you know, craziness in this part of the world, you know, so I thought, let me make my facts straight, you know, before I, you know, with the, especially the first edition of the book came in 2020 during the COVID, and now with the tail end of Trump 1.0 administration. So the title is The Gods Must Be Crazy, you know, based on the movie. And over here, we are going to discuss about my second edition of it, especially with the Trump 2.0 edition. You know, in short, you know, I'm a product of, you know, many of the craziness or absurdities in the world. You know, now we're going to dive a little bit into the AI space. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. It seems like you've been around for a little while in terms of ERP, and you've seen the growth in trajectories and changes that even that type of software has experienced. I mean, even in the last 10 years, I think we've seen a lot of changes in that space. But it's interesting how you kind of have bridged the gap between ERP and AI, mm-hmm. and you've taken it more from a, like you said, a macro level probably. Mm-hmm. I'm curious as to really what has inspired you to kind of make that shift.
There's several reasons, especially during the, when I wrote my first edition of 2020, especially with the short-termism going in this part of the world, especially I do the consulting and the financial, lack of a better word, financial engineering side of the world. So we look at this over this part of the world, especially from a and if more from a hunter mindset, next skill, whether it is a quarterly reports, you know, street need to produce. I think I noticed, you know, I was watching the Bloomberg, you know, the president announced, you know, there is no more quarterly report, only, you know, the media reports. Anyway, so that is a, we are looking at a very short-term perspective in this part of the world. And whether it is on the corporate side or on the, you know, like even the election cycle perspective, every 2 years, you know, or the midterm happening or the, you know, presidential election happening. From that perspective, on the other side, nowadays, especially the China is coming out with a massive, from a more from a century, their objective is 2049. That is a century of rejuvenation. You know? That's their 100-year anniversary of, you know, Communist parties as one. So they're looking from a, they're building everything from a long-term mindset, whether it is on the corporate side or even now on the, even on the, over here on the AI perspective also, we are looking at a very short-term, a bunch of companies, you know, world-class companies here, but they're all competing each other versus the China is, you know, coming out with a AI plus strategy. They're looking at their target is, the minimum target is 2027. Then their next target is 2030. Then their final ultimate objective they're looking at is 2035. That kind of strategy versus we are more looking at a next skill or selling it to another, the bigger player, whatever the AI company, you know, or looking at a quarterly, you know, perspective.
Yeah. So that's a segue into what we're going to be talking about today. And you kind of touched on that. But if we look at the comparisons and, you know, we could talk about the China strategy versus the USA strategy in terms of AI adoption and implementation, what that looks like over the course of the next, you know, 10, 20 years. But I also think that this does touch on more of a global, geopolitical, economical kind of positioning, you know, China and U.S. being the biggest countries in this space. But I mean, this has impact across the Euro regions and, you know, Latin America regions. I mean, everybody is going to try to figure out what their position or statement is regarding artificial intelligence. And I know you're coming with some interesting perspectives, so would love to dive into this a little bit more. Where should we start?
It's a great question. It's a, starting from the... So let's look at the first of all, maybe at the strategy itself. I may put it over this. The China has, you know, especially with the, what they announced on last month, the 26th and 27th, they announced China AI Plus strategy. As I mentioned, they're looking at their strategies. They have a very clear-cut strategy. By 2027, they want to address six of their key industries. You know, they all bring want to bring together. By 2030, they want to look at from an AI, from an infrastructure perspective. 2035, they want to look at from an intelligent society perspective, the whole bringing, you know. And here again, they're not looking at, yes, they may be looking at the country perspective, but in the strategy, they identify they're going to partner with the rest of the world, especially with the United Nations. And I don't know how many of your audience are familiar with the last week, the week before, there was a major SEO conference happened in China. It's around 20 plus countries, the leaders assembled in that part of the world. All the, you know, like I think more than half of the world population, the leaders, you know, the economy, they assembled over there. So everything against, pretty much against us over here, you know, in The same way the BRI also happened. You know, they built the digital Silk Road and digital BRI, Belt and Silk Road, BRI initiative. Then now the digital Silk Road initiative. So they're bringing the whole country, you know, as you mentioned, the Latin Americas, the Africas of the whole world together against, you know, versus over here in this part of the world, we're pretty much going with a hunter mindset, a cowboy mindset. I don't know if we have any set strategy, you know, on this one. Yes, we are bringing, I don't know, some fancy announcement saying that, I think the other day that during the dinner, I don't know where the number came from Mark Zuckerberg's mind. You know, I think he quoted around $600 billion in investing or some big bit dollar. You know, he cooked up the number. We don't have any strategy. Yes, we may have the dinner stuff happening. I'm not aware about any strategy in this part of the world. And we're looking at a bunch of crabs in a bucket trying to pull each other's, you know, like, versus the China is bringing with a very strategically focused, you know, they have a set strategy and they're assembling all their enterprises together. I don't know how familiar are you with this part of we treat as a Magnificent Seven is the biggest, you know, the companies in that's only $20 trillion company. And most of them are based on the rage, you know, like the social media. Over in China, you're looking at, if you look at the 75% of their Fortune 500 companies, around 100 and something companies, they're bringing $83 trillion assets they hold. And they're bringing all those companies under the strategy. $83 trillion, the world economy, it's a world GDP, it's only around, I think, $120 trillion. You're talking about 70, you know. And now, it's not only the China they bring, you know, like that. They're assembling the whole world against us. I'm talking about U.S. Against one country, the whole world, you know. And they're writing, so far, we enjoyed the benefit because we wrote the standard. We own the, in a way, the internet. You know, the DARPA created the standard. We create. Right now, with they're assembling, we are going our own way. All the standard, most of the standard organizations now are, you know, it's a big Chinese influence and it's growing exponentially. And then now, you know, like especially they're partnering with the United Nations of the world, the whole rest of the world, including the Indians, you know, like the Modi was down there, you know, they're bringing the whole world together. They're going to write the standard. They're going to own it. The next generation AI. And yes, they learned from the century of humiliation, the Chinese century of humiliation. Unfortunately, if we don't learn, it is going to be a century of our humiliation.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things you're saying in here, which, you know, I think I'd like to dive into a bit more. When I think about the U.S. strategy right now, what I would say is that it's probably definitely infrastructure based, right? So we are trying to figure out how to build additional resources, infrastructure, facilities, energy consumption, those mm-hmm. types of areas so that we can manage the AI that is built versus where China is going, I would argue is probably more in the software utilization. And as you said, also the standardization of what AI is. And so maybe one of the first questions to tackle is, what do we think is more critical? Do we think that the infrastructure component is more critical than the standardization component or the software component? And I have often argued that I feel that the standardization process is substantially more critical, especially right now, where a lot of organizations are hyping various forms of AI, mm-hmm. which technically, mm-hmm. capabilities-wise, don't exist. And so the sooner that we could wrap our minds around what a standard system is, whether that's protocol standards, standards around automation, what is autonomy, what is AGI? Those metrics are all over the place purely to feed corporate interest as opposed to a standardization across all of AI worldwide. And so I think one of the things you're talking about is, how much investment do we want to make in formulating those standards versus do we want to spend more time implementing the infrastructure to support whatever gets built in the future? I tend to lean towards the standard side, but I would say the only standard we're seeing in the US right now is definitely infrastructure related.
Yeah, that's a great point. Again, I don't want to claim expertise on anything and everything, and this is based on my observation. Yes, from the infrastructure side, especially the president assembled, to his credit, he assembled a team and come out with the staff, whatever the about $500 billion initiative going building the infrastructure, especially in the Memphis. I'm based in Memphis. We hold, as of now, the largest AI computer system in this Grok, the system to date, in this part of the world. Yes, all this, the Grok or the Claude and others are amazing companies, ChatGPT and all those, the OpenAI and all these companies are doing great things, but their own way. Versus on the other side, to your credit, as you mentioned, that China is building the standard, and along with that one, they're strategically addressing what kind of AI, how they're going to address, what kind of standard they want to set it. And they efficiently or spending, because of all the restrictions, they learn, they're working around those things. And, the DeepSeek moment, the Sputnik moment, they built for the OpenAI spent $100 million on over $100 million on training something. They with over that item, 5.6 million, they managed to, for the price of a, maybe exaggerating a little bit, the price of a Tesla, they managed to build a huge,
Yeah.
This one. So the point, yes, along with we need to build the infrastructure. We need to address all those things, but the building the standard that is going to, again, you need to look at from the whether you want to hunt for just the infrastructure, building the data center. Along with that one, you need to farm it. You need to decide what kind of farmland they're going to build it for, not just for the next quarterly result or next, the AI version. They need to take a look at it from a decade perspective or century perspective. That is where the standards are very critical. And that is where partnering with other, like-minded partners and coming with the United Nations. And again, this country led because we set the standard in 60s and 70s on most stuff. And now the standards are set by China.
Yeah. It's interesting because I've had this a similar type of conversation with several people now who suggest let AI just be AI, let people use it, let people discover new ways to innovate with it. Don't worry about the standards, don't worry about the terminology, don't worry about taxonomy or anything else. Just let people play with it and eventually we'll figure it all out. It will come, right? It doesn't have to be decided right now. And I don't know. I tend to have a different perspective on that. But I'm curious, what do you think?
Well, if you leave it to the people, it is going to be, they're going to create a bunch of TikTok influencers, a bunch of cat videos coming out of it, all those crap coming out of it. Look at that, our own Magnificent Seven. It is a $100 billion industry built on race, making each other, cutting each other, sitting on. We are completely losing the civility. They're building the look at again, this money we are spending on the AI. Many of those AI, by the Meta or And I need to be ethical, I need to be careful, naming, look at the Magnificent Seven, what is that amount is spent for? Versus look at the Chinese wisely investing on, their focus is they're identifying six strategy areas where they need to, including the manufacturing, the robotics, research and development, those industries, they're investing on the applied AI perspective. Versus we are investing on the rage, coming out on each other's throat, this kind of, crappy videos coming out. I'm sorry for my language. Cat videos. We are building on that kind of stuff. Meanwhile, China has also, like the parent company of TikTok is, the Chinese. But I believe the same version of China, TikTok, is not allowed. They're teaching their kids. First of all, social media is allow only just a couple of hours at the maximum. Even then, their version of the TikTok, Dayu, or I forgot the name of this one, they teach on the robotics side. They teach on the scientific side of it. Versus our kids, they're addicted to our AI is building. Let me put it this way, straightforward. Our AI companies, many of those Magnificent Seven companies, are dopamine dealers. They build AI building on rage. And versus, they're setting China is setting the standard for rest of the world. We are going to be in an ivory tower, We will be sitting on LO versus the whole rest of the world is moved on to the Chinese standard.
Yeah. I think about macro government, world politics and the such. And there's a lot of similarities to enterprises. And I'll go into an enterprise and consult with them and suggest some changes. And I usually get a response that is something along the lines of, well, we can't do that for whatever the reason is. Or we've always done this, we don't want to change, but mostly it's around, we can't do that. And my response is usually, you can do it, you are choosing not to do it. And what I see a lot of times, especially when we compare the US versus China, you could argue some of it has to deal with capitalism. We're a free market. We want people to go out, find new ways to make money. And in doing so, yes, you're building the addiction into the product for continued use. And I would definitely argue that a lot of what AI is out there is nothing more than an addiction forming software, no different than social media or anything else that we've produced. Whereas China has clearly mandated, we are going to do this. And so if the CEO says we're going to do it, odds are it usually gets done. Some of this, I think, goes back to administration, government organizations. We could say President Trump has the power to mandate some of this, but some of it will get pushed back because of free market. So, maybe we are in sense also our worst enemies because we've got a system in place to allow for that addiction while negating in some other cases the need that we have to drive a standard and drive innovation, as you said, both in our educational system moving upwards, but just more nationally developing mm-hmm. those standards in order to ensure that we have a firm control over the market.
Completely agree with you, all those things. But unfortunately, that's the very reason I wrote the book, the first edition of it. And I was a little bit hopeful when I wrote the first edition of it 5 years ago. Now I completely lost that hope. Take a look at the, first of all, we need to have a very strong leadership. This country, again, was built by the Theodore Roosevelts and the FDRs, and the China is learning from them, and they're following the true capitalism in that part of the world. Over this part of the world, I don't know what we need to call it as plutocracy, or there's a different, we're in a gilded age. So let's come back to the addressing the, you know, some of these issues. On the AI development itself, if you take a look at it, do you know the more than half of the AI developers are? Do you know where they're based?
Here in the US?
I wish.
No, I mean, are you asking worldwide?
Worldwide.
Yeah, where are most of the AI developers currently in the world?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I would say probably China.
China. Even in this part of the world, at least around half of the AI developers are Chinese origin. It is a competition between, it's no more, this is from not from the NVIDIA CEO himself. The competition is no longer with China versus Chinese AI versus US AI. Even within the, as I mentioned, it's almost half the AI developers are Chinese origin. It is China versus, you know, Chinese origin, Chinese AI versus the Chinese origin AI. You know, my point is, if you look at it over here, half of the universities, this is Harvard's Kristen, I forgot the name of the scholar, predicted back in, I think, around 15 years ago. At that time itself, he predicted around 40-50% of the universities we're going to close down, either going to, you know, go bankrupt, or, you know, one way or other. That happened only, as of last year, it's only happened around 15%. But with all the new trends happening, and with especially with the AI coming into, and another budget, with the new bills and a big beautiful bill and all those things, many of universities are going to, some of the Ivy League universities here, they may survive. So in this, especially in the, and 1 in 8 STEM graduates are coming from China. And almost more than the half PhDs are from China. And even the patent-wise, I think, let me quote, you know, before I need to be, yeah, the most of the patents are from the Chinese. I think 1 in 6, I need to rough up back again. China holds 70% of AI patents 2023 versus China, US holds only barely 14% of AI patents. This is again, I think, the number back in 2023, dated number. And China is opening every week one university, modern university. And as I mentioned, we are closing down, you know, predicted to close down half of our university. And 1 in 8, as I mentioned, 1 in 8 STEM graduates is coming from, when we produce one STEM graduate, they're producing 8 STEM graduates. And they're writing the standard. And we are watching all the cat videos. It's just, you know, again, I'm not against the cat. I know, by no means. we are creating the TikTok influencers on the algorithms designed by the Chinese AI developers.
Yeah. Well, to wrap up, how about, what would you do right now? Like, if you had the magic wand and you could fix it all, what would be your number one recommendation?
I had some hope 5 years ago. That's the reason, again, the first edition of this. With the second edition, we need to have some serious shock therapy for us to relay. There is no, I don't see any silver bullets. We need to have some real shock therapy, something, you know, to let us understand. Otherwise, we are a bunch of frogs in a boiling water. It's a water is already, we are not realizing yet. Again, fundamentally, we need to address this kind of issues. We need to address through education. Unfortunately, in this part of the world, you know, the first budget cut is happening in that area. Education is, that's where the budgets are cut. I do not have any magic solution.
I can't say that I have one either, but I was curious as to hear what you might have to say. Either way, it's a fascinating conversation, and I think it's also one that we need to have more often. So I appreciate you bringing it to the show today, and I thank you for your insights.
Chris, it's truly an honor. Appreciate letting me give my contrarian perspective. I hope I may have some solution next time.
Think about it some more, and then we can work together to figure it out. So how can people get in touch with you or connect with you?
They can find me over LinkedIn, Saji Madapat, with the name search. They can find my book also on Amazon. The Gods Must Be Crazy is after the 1980s, movie, we need to learn again, if I may put it from that perspective. So we need to, the solution is, let me put it, the solution is in people like if you watch it, if you're familiar with the movie, some of those tribesmen, some of those historic, and if you look at our own history, look at the solution is within us. We need to go back and study how we had very similar challenges back in 100 years ago with the Theodore Roosevelt. He fixed it with, the Gilded Age he was in. He fixed it with the square deal. We need to have a new kind of square deal. And we need to have the Theodore of FDR. We had during the Depression or the Second World War, we had an even much more challenging situation. But we had some amazing great leaders, and people rallied behind those great leaders. The solution is, by reading our own history. That provides, it's very much that back in those days, they may be dealing with the steam engine. Yeah, now it may be dealing with the silicon. That is only, the difference. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, again, I appreciate it. And for everyone who is watching, thank you. And we'll see you again next week on The Chris Hood Show.